Jim, how reliable is the historians in that area? In other words, where does Josephus stand in the eyes of other historians and the other literature that we have in that area?
In the areas that Josephus agrees with the other historians, in the areas that his history can be verified, then he's considered very reliable. He says that he relies in his history on First Maccabees as one of his primary sources for writing his history, and so it's kind of tough to look at them as independent records of the historical period. But other than what we have in terms of archaeological evidence and other writings that are left behind, annals, then it's kind of tough to verify because there's just not a lot of other history written during that period about that period. There are later histories that are written of the period, but they use First Maccabees and Josephus as primary sources.
Ron Porter.
Most people consider it to be pretty reliable, but...
Jim, would you make some comment as far as you mentioned the book of Daniel? Would you make some comment as to what you see as the relationship between some of the prophets and Daniel 2 of this, or whether you don't see it?
Daniel 2, of course, we have the vision of the great image with the golden head and silver chest and arms, brass body and feet of iron and clay, which represents these kingdoms that would rule, those four kingdoms being Babylon and Medo-Persia and Greece and Rome. And during the days of the Roman Empire, the kingdom of God would be established. Daniel's prophecies later in the book are, to me, fascinating. And I wish I had more time. You'd know a lot more about it. That was your subject. Than I would probably, just because I ran out of time in looking at it. But the prophecies there from Daniel 7 through Daniel 11, he discusses in chapter 8, it seems at least evident to me that Antiochus Epiphanes is pictured. Alexander the Great coming into the land, his kingdom being divided into four kingdoms, and then out of that coming the little horn that would persecute tremendously the land of Palestine. And that seems to be an obvious reference to me to Antiochus Epiphanes. I believe the temple was to be desecrated for 2,300 days, which is roughly 6.5 years. The dates I have here, I'm showing 6 years, but 6.5 would be pretty close. That just seems pretty clear. Then in chapter 11, where he talks about the king of the north and the king of the south, and they're bickering between each other, and how that would cause problems for the Jews as well.
Can I make a comment?
Please.
I asked that question, just for the fact that I think that's the tie we have. And the book of Daniel then, and that prophecy, sets in for God's people gives us the prophecies we see fulfilled in that particular time. This is just absolutely amazing. It is. And remember that last prophecy, in Daniel 10:14, after he was so distressed by the 77th prophecy. On one hand, Daniel was elated. Messiah's coming. On the other hand, he was going to be destroyed. So in Daniel 10:14, gave him one more prophecy regarding thy people and the latter days. And then as you go through chapter 11, it seems to unfold this particular thing. If that's true, then Daniel 11 especially, and the first part of 12, because that's all one vision, is Daniel's commentary or prophecy on this particular period. And this is absolutely astounding to show the hand of God, because we're moving towards the fullness of time when the Messiah will be born. And I just ask for that to emphasize that tie to Daniel 11. I would like to make one little comment. You know, there are two things we see here. One is, you know, Hellenism is just really portraying the battle between God's people and what we call worldliness. And on the other hand, here's what you see when you have spiritual people, or those that are to be spiritual, involved in political systems and institutions and treaties. Even though this is not democracy here, it doesn't change one thing. Spiritual principles messing with political principles absolutely will not work. And here's a historical example ahead of time.
Doug. In the New Testament, remember that the Sadducees are the political group still. They're the ones, they're very materialistic. Of course, they don't believe in the afterlife. But they control the high priesthood. They are priests. The priests are Sadducees. They're concerned about the political realm, where we have the Pharisees who are controlling the synagogue and the spiritual realm of the Jews. And all of that came about and began during this period. I wish I had time to, would have had time to elaborate.
I want to ask a question that basically has to do with the New Testament and what you taught leads up to it. You have taught us that from the Maccabean period of time, there evolved the Sadducees and the Pharisees, and they were bitter rivals, bitter to the point of death. What was their relationship by the time that Jesus came? Obviously, they still were enemies somewhat. We have a misconception, talk about the Pharisees and the Sadducees like they were buddies, but they really weren't.
No, they were not. They obviously were not. They were not violent towards each other in the period of the first century. One of the reasons for that is because when Rome annexed a land, their big thing was peace, the Pax Romana, Roman peace, and that's what they imposed on the land. They were not so concerned about imposing their culture. You could keep your culture as long as you maintain the peace. If you can't maintain the peace, then they would come in and help you maintain the peace in very pleasant ways. So that was one of the things, I think, that kept the Jews and these Pharisees and Sadducees from continuing their bitterness. Over time, the fact that they were brethren, unlike their relationship with the Samaritans, I think they learned to coexist. They kind of had their own sphere that they ran in, their own circles that they were in, and then occasionally, when they had a common enemy like Jesus, they would even come together and work together to rid themselves of it.
We have a saying, politics makes strange bedfellows, and that seems to be the case with Pharisees and Sadducees. And really, it's an amazing thing if you think about it, that they were able to put aside their differences and unite in their common hatred of the Lord. Now, another question that I want to ask you about is sort of the book of First Maccabees. You know, you mentioned it during your talk, and you might, again, just make a real quick review of that book, what it's about and the time frame that it was written in, and then on top of that, you know, there are a lot of the liberal scholars that want to take the book of Daniel and say that it was not written by Daniel the prophet. It was written during this time because they want to take out the element of prophetic. You might want to mention something about that.
I wish I knew more about the book of Daniel, but I'll make a comment about First Maccabees. Okay. First Maccabees, it does identify the Romans as friends within the book. There are references in there to John Hyrcanus, and those two facts lead us to conclude that it was probably written sometime during the first century BC. The tone of the book suggests the author was a Palestinian Jew, very orthodox. It does, let's see, it covers the period from 175 to 135, so it covers about a 40-year period of the Maccabean Revolt, and so that's the period that it covers.
About that.
Yep. Alan?
Yes.
Isaac?
Jim, I really enjoyed your talk. I just, mine is completely different from anyone else's. I haven't done a whole lot of study on this history. I was just wanting to ask about something I saw on your first chart. I agree with you that Jesus was born at least in 4 BC, if not in 1 AD. The only thing I've seen is commentators who argue the point back and forth. What I've noticed is they base it on the fact they say they can pinpoint Herod's death. And what is that based on, Josephus, or what? Why do you have that there so that I might be able to look it up myself?
Someone else might be more up on that, but it's based on pinpointing Herod's death. We have a very clear historical record of the Roman government in the first century BC, going from Julius Caesar. Century and his assassination and Octavian moving down. So we know when Herod ruled. We also know when he died. There are also Roman records. After his death, Archelaus ruled. He only ruled for 6 years before it was shown that he could not maintain peace in the land. Again, if you can't maintain peace in the land, the Romans are going to bring in their own rulers, their own governors, and maintain peace. And that's why we have somebody like Pilate ruling the land whenever Jesus is crucified. After Archelaus was deposed, Roman governors were brought into the land. But it's just based on a clear understanding of when things happened during that time, the good records of Roman government that allow us to make that. But there might be somebody who can say more.
Alvin.
Jim, just a little follow-up on Isaac's point. Isn't Homer Hagen that shows Acts 2 is AD 29 rather than 33 AD on the establishment of the church? Is this a 4-year?
Most people show 29 or 30.
How does that affect the time frame we're preaching there by the church being established in 33 AD?
I don't say the church was established in 33 AD.
I didn't think you did at this point. So with Homer Hagen and his follow-up, I read quite a bit of his before. You think we should address that based on the evidence that you gave tonight?
Well, I didn't give a lot of evidence for it, but I do think it needs to be adjusted. The calendar was made in order to try to reflect the birth of Christ, but it was just a mistake was made when it was put together, and it was never corrected. And I generally state that the church was established in AD 30. That's just a good round number for me, but very likely it was 29.
This may be getting too far off the subject, and I don't want to do that. But if what is the evidence for the 33 of the AD? What is the flip side of that?
I don't really know. It's not something I've looked at.
We can save that for another topic.
Well, 33, Jesus was 30 years old when he started his ministry.
Based on the age of Jesus would be the
age. And so you start with year one, but he was born in 4 BC when Herod died. Luke 1 and 5, says Herod was the king. Herod died in 4 BC.
Anything else? So the Sadducees, right, more Hellenistic, to the Hellenistic side. And their rejection of resurrection of the spirits is part of that Hellenistic influence. Can you elaborate just a little bit more on the Umayyads and Herod, how they come into the picture?
Yeah. But when Hyrcanus II and Aristobulus II were vying for the throne, Hyrcanus II would run out of town, and he was really pretty satisfied with that. He didn't care to fight. He left voluntarily. But Antipater down in Idumea convinced him that he shouldn't be satisfied with being kicked out of town, and said, you know, I'll help you. Why don't you go over to the Nabataeans and King Aretas over there, and he's a good friend of mine, and he'll take care of you. So he went over there, and sure enough, Antipater and Aretas got their forces together and decided that they would make a run on the city of Jerusalem and try to win the throne back for Hyrcanus II. And again, it was during that time that Pompey entered the land. Antipater, part of the agreement whenever Pompey took over Jerusalem was that, was it Hyrcanus or Aristobulus? Anyway, Antipater ended up being made one of the leading rulers over Judea at that time. Now, following this period, there's going to be a lot of intrigue in Rome. Caesar's going to be assassinated, Julius Caesar. His throne is going to be usurped by Brutus and Cassius. And then Pompey's going to enter into the scene. And eventually it's going to be taken over by Julius Caesar's nephew, Octavian. Well, in the course of all those change of hands, every time somebody else took the rule in Rome, Antipater said, by the way, we're still loyal to you. We're still here. We're not going anywhere. Where, whenever there was intrigue like that, that was the perfect time to revolt. For a country to voluntarily show their allegiance to a new party coming in to rule was something unusual and something that was almost always rewarded. And so by doing this, Antipater received more and more power. Now, he never was real popular in Jerusalem, because he wasn't a Jew, he was an Edomite. But anyway, his son succeeded him. And he did the same thing. He continued to show his support of Rome and eventually received the title of king and was awarded the kingship of all of Palestine.
One last comment. You said at the beginning that rationalism on behalf of the Hellenists was insidious. And I know, you know, like Paul mentions the Greeks seek for wisdom and the Jews for a sign. And that's part of that Hellenistic influence in their rationalism.
Right.
But isn't it true that the reason why Hellenistic rationalism was contrary to Christianity is because there was nothing, it had nothing to do with Revelation. But Paul would always reason from the scriptures. I mean, the scriptures and the plan of God is reasonable.
It's reasonable, right.
And you can rationally explain it, but it always flows from Revelation.
Right.
And they rejected Revelation. All right, thank you.
Okay. Let me just say just one more thing. What was that I have in my article that I think is really important, is showing how all these things that were happening prepared the way for the Messiah. In the first century, when Jesus came, what we had a very unusual situation. We have a world that is pretty much culturally one, culturally united. Because when the Romans came into the land, they didn't impart their culture. And the Greek culture continued to grow and continued to take over the land. And so we have a culturally united world for the most part.
controlling the whole region and peace being maintained. And so that's going to allow the gospel to spread very quickly and very easily from country to country, because it's all one political world. And we don't have different cultures when we get from one city to another city that vie a whole lot with each other. And we have a common language, the Greek language. And so that, along with the diaspora, the spread of the Jews that were already located in all these cities across the empire, all of that served to help prepare the way for the Messiah. I think that's an important thing that happened here.